This is a CNA podcast.
People say 2020 was the year the work-life penny dropped. We started questioning if work was coming at the expense of all these wonderful things in life important to us. Family time, well-being, and other pursuits that bring us joy. All this was embodied in the debate of returning to the office and to what extent workers can say no. This was the topic of one of our most listened to episodes on Heart of the Matter, published almost exactly 1 year ago. So we thought it apt to return to this issue once again. The question now, is 2021 the year where employees like you and I take back control over work? Already there are predictions of a great resignation wave. People have also spoken up against bad bosses, poor working conditions, and unfair demands as work and home melt. But how much of our expectations are realistic? Do we seem to pin all the responsibilities for a happy life on our workplaces, and is that fair? It's Tuesday, October 19, 11:30, and I'm Lin Su Ling. With me on Zoom to discuss these issues are the same two gentlemen from our episode a year ago, and both of them are frequent commentators on CNA's commentary section. So there's Leong Chee Tong, co-founder of Engage Rocket.
Hi.
And Adrian Tan, strategist at the Institute of Human Resources Professionals.
Hi, everyone. Great to be back.
So let's start off with this question. It's been 1 year since we chatted, and there's more talk of sensitivity to workloads, people's home situations, and even mental health in the workplace. Chee Tong, has the balance shifted away from firms and managers towards workers and workfare in the past year?
I don't think that it's necessarily a shift in balance. I think it's more of a shift in perspective. We've gone through now coming to a year and a half or more of this sort of remote work / hybrid work type of environment. And I think it's proven out in many cases that remote work, hybrid work can work in some situations. And right now, the conversation that is ongoing between employers and employees has been very much around like how do we navigate this balance between the two.
But Adrian, would you say that we've reached a satisfactory point considering where pay, benefits and understanding from bosses are? Are we at a good place or there's still some way to go?
We are definitely at a better place, but it is still somewhere to go. As we have seen in many articles about this great resignation, I don't think we have witnessed the full-blown effect of it because traditionally in Singapore context, a wave of resignation comes in during year-end or maybe around Chinese New Year period. For us, we haven't really seen the full extent. And during that period, you can again imagine the kind of reaction that companies will be taking. And that would change the whole paradigm all over again.
What is behind this great resignation wave where more than half of workers polled say they're constantly thinking of throwing the towel? It sounds like a pretty scary situation. What's so bad that's making people think they should jettison their job security in an uncertain environment?
I actually had a thought about this earlier this morning, and I think it's really a few reasons, but the key one would be in many organizations, not every one of them are still able to accommodate to a remote first kind of environment. Because of that, profitability suffered, productivity suffered. In order to make good and try to make up for it, companies or rather the owners or maybe the business leaders will just try to double down. Instead of 8 hours, you put in 10. Instead of 10, you put in 12. And we've also seen recently, there was an article about workplace toxicity, which interestingly happened a lot more or became more prevalent as we go through this remote setting, which could be quite a good question mark because why is it happening? Because people are not seeing face to face, but instead, a lot of things are actually happening behind the scenes. Things like reaching out to you past midnight or expecting a very ridiculous deadline. Again, those are compensating factors that I am seeing a lot of business leaders in organizations, they are still unable to catch up to this evolving change. Over time, people will just become jaded. With the same amount of salary or on par, they will be looking at, why don't I just try something else? And also being pent up in an environment where you cannot even get any form of outlet to distress yourself. You cannot travel, you cannot go Johor. The only thing that one can really consider is, okay, maybe I should try my luck somewhere else. Having said that, I do want to also point out to people who is sitting on their fence that wherever you go to, the probability of facing similar challenges will be there. It's just in different shape or form, but otherwise it is just trying to solve one problem with another problem.
You know, we've been in this hybrid work situation for so long. It's been more than 1 year, 1 year and a half. Why is it that we're still not getting this balance? Why are workers still languishing? Because your survey, the 2021 Engage Rocket survey, fewer people say they're able to cope with stress compared to a year ago. So what's happening here? What's different about stress and work now compared to a year ago? Why is it higher?
The push factors have definitely increased. So the stress and the burnout that people are facing is definitely still there. The whole idea of switching off during certain times of the day, even if the bosses agree to doing that, sometimes the individual employee themselves find it difficult to say, especially responsible Singaporean workers. They look at their email and it's just piling up. And if you don't know how to control notifications on your phone or whatever it is, it just keeps popping up. You feel like you have no choice but to respond to it. And that happens pretty much throughout the day, even though there might be some companies that do a culture of asynchronous communication a little bit better than others. The other wrinkle to this is the pull factors for people to stay in a company have also weakened beyond just strengthening the push factor.
How so?
Very simple fact of the matter that we interact a lot less with our colleagues. The friendships that we have at work, which previously were a very important component of not just our work lives, but our entire lives. A lot of our colleagues have become friends over the years. That opportunity to connect with people that we are spending the majority of our waking lives with has been severely diminished because of this situation. So when you feel that itch to move somewhere else, there's a lot less keeping you within the organization because those ties are just no longer as strong as before.
One thing we're hearing also is that pay is picking up. Pay that has lagged behind performance and contribution. Salaries are catching up though. Surely firms are paying top dollar for talent and that would retain them?
Not really. For maybe a minority of the workforce where they're literally living paycheck to paycheck every month, that may be the case. And then moving somewhere else, even with a lower pay, may be a significant dent to their existing lifestyle. But I think for a majority of Singaporean workers, that is not the case. Even if they were to take 10% pay cut, but would have a much higher amount of work flexibility, work-life balance, work-life harmony, and maybe to be working with a boss that actually cared about their development, that helped them to grow. I've actually seen people who have made that decision to quit, and others have made the decision to quit anyway, especially in the technology sector, knowing that the demand for their skills is still extremely high and the supply is still very limited. They're just taking a bet that they can find a different place that would value them more than their existing employer.
Adrian, was pre-pandemic work that bad and that undignified that like people now won't stand for it without the connection with colleagues? They refuse to be, say, the last parent who picked up their kid from childcare. They refuse to put up with morning commute or long hours. When do you think the penny dropped?
I wouldn't say it's that bad before, but of course, what you don't mention rightly, there's really a lot of other factors in play when we are able to interact with each other face-to-face. I remember in my first business, we do a lot of bonding sessions, after work drinking sessions, we would go for mini golf and all that. And all this are not for fun. It's fun, but at the same time, it's really to build up that bond. And I do remember people telling me, you know, one of the key reasons why I'm still here is because of the people. The people here are nice, even though work can be a bit meh at time. A lot of things really happen at the same time, which resulted in where we are today. And most significantly, the kind of workload that is being imposed right now in order to make good the kind of profit drops or the productivity drop due to this remote first environment can be very challenging for a lot of business owners to swallow. They still have to pay for the rent. They still have to pay for your payroll and all that. They still have to go through a daily struggle. And just like you, they are also stuck at home, maybe also with their young kids, with no outlet to de-stress. The stress is really coming in from all angles, which I think really pent up all this kind of situation. In the past, we would just, okay, never mind, let me go to a pub, go for a drink, let it out, chill with my friend, everything will be okay. But you don't even get the opportunity, right?
I'm wondering, because there's a lot of talk about mental health challenges, and 84% of respondents to a Black Box survey here last week say that that's a major reason why people quit. But didn't employers get better at being supportive and removing stigma around mental health? What do you think, Chi-Chung?
Gotten better is relative, right? I mean, it's from a reference point that was very low to begin with. It is true that the conversations around mental health at least are out in the open today. But I can safely say that for many employers, there is still a certain amount of skepticism that are people really facing real mental health issues, or are they just like finding a new excuse to Skype? Even if they believed that the mental health issues were real, very few of them know what to do about it. A very common thing is, okay, I'm going to invest in an employee assistance program or an EAP, right? And say, okay, that's done. I think I'm good. Or hire an in-house counselor. And then, all right, great, I'm done. I've already catered to the mental health of my staff. It's almost transactional in terms of these interventions that companies take with their staff. I think the awareness and the understanding of what causes these mental health issues, how it manifests, the impact that it has on individual psychology, and then bubbling up into overall team and business performance, is still very nascent and very early days. We're still trying to figure that out. Because of that, we don't know how best to target the different mental health issues that people do face, because burnout is very generic. It could be because of the workplace environment where you're surrounded by screaming young kids every day and trying to have conference calls, or it could be because of bosses who don't know how to effectively delegate in a remote working environment and tend to micromanage every piece of communication or work that comes out. It's for a variety of different factors. And having a one-size-fits-all approach, we need to get beyond that. But at the same time, also, I think we need to collectively figure out how to get beyond that.
So Adrian, I think Chi-Tung is definitely onto something. There was an employment hero survey recently that showed most employers in Singapore believe their workplaces are supportive of mental health, but then employees less so. What advice do you have to close this expectations gap between employers and employees?
There's a situation where you really need to bring the experts, because traditionally we haven't, as a society, and maybe even as a generation, we haven't really been very pinpoint on problem statements. I mean, we were brought up in an environment where, okay, you got a cough, drink more water. Oh, you broke your leg, drink more water. Everything is solved by drinking more water. But in the case of mental wellness, it's really true that everyone will be suffering at a different level, different stage. Even personally, I've gone through some very dark times, which I'll be happy to talk about some other time. But it is really very hard for people to have a clear understanding of the things that you're going through. And these are things that you really need professional help. You cannot self-diagnose, you cannot go pharmacy, buy some OTC medicine and expect things to go away. That would really help the employees as well as the management to understand exactly what is going on and really to tackle the problem at the root cause, rather than just trying to mask it superficially and expect things to magically go away.
I know people want supportive supervisors. We all do. And supervisors who factor in mental well-being, managers who are understanding of challenges. But should workplaces and supervisors really bear responsibilities for employees' mental health?
To a large extent, yes. It's just like companies are also bearing the brunt on benefits, on salary, on your workplace infrastructure. Mental wellness obviously is always there. It's just not on the top of the list, because for the longest time, people have their own way of managing their stress. But with all those options taken away, companies can, one, decide to take a more intervention step, or two, let nature take its course, which obviously would lead to a larger problem for you to handle as attrition kicks in, resignation letters flood in. It is still something that companies may want to take into consideration, because over time, all these things have been very blurred. Even outside of mental wellness, you're looking at things like ESG, you know, how companies are looking into environment issues, how heavy are you into diversity. In the past, we never talked about all this, but progressively, especially with the younger generation, these are things that they really, really focus on. In fact, studies have shown younger consumers will actually not patronize a business if they are low on, say, climate change. It has already been proven in research. The same thing for employees, your current one as well as your future one. If you're not hitting the mark on certain aspect, I won't even consider you, or I mean, just go off to some other company. Whether you like it or not, a company does have to do something about it.
I think Adrian makes really good points. If you imagine the role of a sports coach and you're trying to get your team to perform at its best, you don't just worry about how often they're training, like they're putting in 8 hours of training every day. You don't just worry about what they're eating, their kind of nutrition, how much they're sleeping. You very much have to be worried about how they are thinking, their mental health, whether they have any problems. And if you want, as a coach, to get the best out of your team and have your team perform the best, you have no choice but to take ownership of the mental health of your team as well as everything else. This pandemic has really accelerated the destruction of this idea that work only exists within the four walls of the office. Work only exists from 9 to 6. That illusion has been really busted. The myth has been busted. And now we're in a place that if we want our teams to be performing at their best, we have no choice but to start taking on some responsibility. I wouldn't say all the responsibility, but some responsibility for their mental health.
It sounds bad for workers, but worse for middle managers who now have to bear these additional burdens. But has the train left the station? I mean, how do you tell supervisors struggling to reconcile all of this that they now have this additional responsibility for caring for their workers and making sure that morale is high all the time?
That had always been on the agenda as a manager.
Mm.
For good managers, even pre-pandemic, they would get into the nitty-gritty of their team's lives, what drives them, what keeps them motivated, what do they fear, what are they excited about, and actively create a working environment that is conducive to that specific team that they are leading. As team members come and go, they evolve that workplace and working culture accordingly. All that has happened is that this particular skill of management has become a bit better defined, a bit more concrete, and now it is almost like a job demand. If you want to be a people manager, these are the things that you better get right and you better learn how to do on the job or through programs. Although most of it, I would argue, has to be done on the job with good mentorship from senior leaders and from others within our own personal networks. It's part and parcel. As a people manager, this is something that you've always had to accept. Now you just have to accept that the execution and implementation of that particular skill is different than before.
The thing is, it always sounds like this is some zero-sum competition between workers and firms or even middle managers. But do workers understand that the people who bear underperformance and the people who have to pick up the slack are peers and teammates? Would that change how they see this whole thing?
Definitely, to a large extent. The challenge, as one may also be quite cognizant of, is it's very hard to observe any poor performance right now. Any underperformance, you also cannot see because all you get to see is what you have in front of your computer. It's something that requires reminder. That's what many people, managers, maybe leaders, HR departments have to be mindful of. No one has ever complained about, oh, you talk to me too much, you over-communicate too much. No, in fact, many times it's because we under-communicate. That is something that we have to do, especially in a remote setting. It is very hard for anyone to take the initiative to maybe even do a call and punch in some numbers. But I think the responsibility falls larger on the people managers to really initiate those kind of conversations, just to do some check-ins, no agenda, making sure people are okay, and always make sure that this is something on the priority and ensure that people are well listened to. Hold your town hall, your Ask Me Anything session on a regular basis. Trash out things before things get so big that you have to take reactive measures. So these are just conversations people have to table up, and middle management, people managers need to find an opportunity to do that.
So the litmus test really is what some workers are demanding for when they think about the whole work-life balance. One thing that comes to my mind is this right to disconnect, which is a notion that's made law in France and gathering steam all over Europe. People don't want to feel emails, messages, communications outside of office hours. Chi-Chung, is that something that firms should be open to? And how do people reconcile this with the idea that some people actually exchange rigidity of hours for flexibility throughout the day to have work-life balance within office hours?
Mm. Firms need to be open to the fact that there are going to be times where their employees aren't going to be responsive on all methods of communication. However, those times need to be worked out at a team level rather than at a legislative level or even at a company level, because every team has different needs. Every individual has different needs. It's very difficult to mandate certain working hours and then end up losing the flexibility, as you mentioned, Suling, that it comes from the whole idea of knowledge work and working whenever and wherever. This has always actually been the case for many of those who have had the opportunity to work in regional or global jobs and roles where they've had to balance different time zones across their geographical mandate. Having this idea of switch off times, maybe a certain number of hours per day and for each individual team to go figure it out, I think that's definitely a positive step and a step in the right direction.
So here's the thing about that unintended consequences that might arise. If people demand for flexibility, those that are able to be more flexible for their organization who stay online or are contactable and responsive, surely they would achieve higher rankings when it comes to that annual appraisal session. So how then do you balance that, Adrian? If the value at work, ultimately the goal is output, won't some gain an advantage over others?
You made a very good point. In terms of the output, that's something that companies definitely have to pay a larger attention to. Things like being responsive, the first one to respond to you, the one who is always having the green light on the chat screen. Those are really quite vanity metrics, because so what if you can do it if you're not churning out your output on a regular basis? First and foremost, companies and people managers need to have a very clear understanding. What exactly are we trying to achieve here? What's the output that you're trying to achieve? And also bearing in mind, in terms of responses, is it really necessary to the kind of output that I'm expecting you to do so?
What if work is team-based and collaborative?
Well, if it's team-based, definitely you would have to make time to come together for discussion. But I think, as what Chitung mentioned, these are things that you have to sort out at team level. Individuals within the team need to identify and share, okay, it's better for me to do this timing because my newborn will be asleep. So is it okay if everyone work around this timing? And we try to cater to each other so that we can have that timing.
Even if it's 1 a.m.?
I don't think that would make it work for everyone else. There has to be some compromise across the board. But as much as possible, I think it would make sense for us to give and take a little bit, because it may be my turn to have a newborn, but in the future, if it's your turn to have a newborn, then do we want to do an eye for an eye kind of thing?
Oh, no.
So I think people have to be mindful of that happening. And of course, to try to cater to everyone as much as possible within the parameter of what they are able to cater to.
I'm hearing you both speak about how there should be more flexibility in the system. People should be able to work together and decide what works best for them, a bit of a give and take. Does that sound like workers have more say then in negotiating what works for them?
Yes.
I think to a large extent, yes. Right now, with what is going on, resignation soon to be sky high, I think employees definitely have a larger say. Well, we imagine bosses has also reached a situation, okay, I've already given more annual leave, I did this, I did that. Yes, I might be doing some of the stuff which they may find overboard. I think I've done everything. What else can I do? Maybe it's time for me to listen to my people instead. Instead of coming up with new top-down approaches, which just literally doesn't work. We have reached a stage where people are being asked of their opinion, and hopefully along the way very soon that their opinions actually matters when it comes to decision-making.
This whole concept of listening, as Adrian was alluding to, it has really taken off. The idea of not just listening, but continuous listening to employees, right? Finding out like what is it that works best and having that open conversation. This is based on a bedrock of trust, right? If your workplace culture has no trust to begin with, then no amount of tech or mechanisms that you put in place is going to work until you sort out the trust issue. But once you have that trust, which is actually in the majority of workplaces, then it's really about, okay, what is it that's going to help us perform at our best together? Part of the new managerial competencies, managerial skills that are required is to have that productive conversation with the team. As a professional, each individual should also be conscious of what works well for them and start being a lot more aware of what they need to be able to give their best to their companies and to have that open conversation. I think promoting both of these skills can only be positive for companies.
Employees also have to be realistic. If you are looking at a retirement job, you don't join a startup. And vice versa, if you're full of drive, you want to change the world, you don't go into civil service law. So you have to really see where you are.
I just want to get to the heart of this though. So if you're saying that workers should be able to speak up, ask for what they need, what if that ideal future work for them means fewer work days, the 4-day work week, and can that even be achieved? How do you guard against this idea that needing time for my priorities is code word for giving less importance to work?
I don't see it as giving less importance to work. You definitely will be spending less time at work, but not exactly less importance, because it's not really measured by the amount of time that you put in. And in fact, I've seen quite a few studies where 4-day work week worked really well for the organization. And because they also realize for the longest time, due to Parkinson's law, you just fill up the time that you actually allocate yourself to. So gone are the long lunches, gone are the pantry talk that take up 30, 20 minutes. And everything is done in a very condensed manner. So many companies that actually attempted this experiment actually see very good results. The results even surpass what they have in terms of expectation. They just want things to be on par, but it actually became better. So it's really about how we manage our time better and try to cut down all the unnecessary downtime if you truly want this to work. And I think it's a good opportunity for company to consider doing it as an experiment, because if you're really looking at a huge wave of people looking to leave companies, this four-day work week might be the key thing that will bring and tie down your people, because it's not something that they can go around to find.
And Chito, do you think that can be done without KPIs being reduced? Because then the litmus test really is you can give people four-day work weeks or you can give people flexible working hours. But what if within those amount of time, you can't reduce KPIs?
I don't think that we should look at this as a trade-off. Whatever a four-day work week, two-day work week, three-day work week, all of this needs to be in service of your business objectives, right? So if your business objectives are to hit all your KPIs, then management needs to have conviction that based on what our staff need and want and what they're telling us, that this is ideal for their performance, that doing this is the best course of action to help them achieve their KPIs. It's not about reducing the KPIs per se. That is something that businesses need to be open to. The problem is that that conversation isn't even happening. But if we have a very open and honest conversation with the team and say that, okay, you guys say that this is something that you want, can we still achieve these goals based on everything they're saying? And if they say, no, not really, either we look at the goals and see if they are unrealistic, or then we have to go back to the team and say, look, we're serving business customers. They're working 5 days a week. I can't have my customer support team working 4 days a week unless I increase my cost by 20%, which I can't do as a business, because then all of you will be out of a job. We need to have that productive conversation. And if the decision at the end of it is that the four-day work week is not possible for this business, then fine, we should continue with a five-day work week and find other ways to alleviate the mental health challenges or the need for balance that the staff have. The problem is if this conversation doesn't even happen and there's no evidence on either side and it's just taken for granted that, okay, whatever the boss says goes, then that kind of environment is what is going to release a lot of good talent into the market for companies that are more progressive to step up.
My last question, just rounding off this podcast, is we've talked a lot about the need to balance performance, compensation, understanding. And there's some assumption still that workplaces really have to exercise initiative to help employees through. But to what extent really should employers be doing that? And to what extent should employees themselves take the initiative to make things work instead of leaving the onus on workplaces? What do you guys think? Your parting shots.
I think we also have to take into consideration the balance. There's definitely still a war on talent going on with the supply of talent shrinking given our low fertility rate. The companies really have to play a larger part in order to attract the people that want to bring the company as well as to retain the talent they already have. So lucky or not, they do have to play a large part in it. But having said that, I think it also takes two hands to clap. You cannot just force the individual to go through what you think is the right thing if he or she do not have the mental gumption to go through it for whatever reason. I think employees would also have a part to play in this entire exercise. If we are able to really sit down with each other to have an understanding of what exactly does it matter to each individual, to really have a very open conversation about what matters to each of us, then I think it is very much possible to make it work without making it seem like, oh, this is so much effort, I'm putting in so much time, I'm not running my business, all I'm doing right now is mental care for everyone, almost becoming a therapy. That's not the case. But if we can have a good conversation beforehand, it would definitely make the situation much easier. And it is just keeping that ongoing maintenance, which will require very little effort between the two.
Yeah, I agree. I think that there are three things that can help companies and employees find this balance. I think the first one is to have that conversation, as Adrian says. I think this conversation needs to be on the table on what that balance is. It needs to take into account different dimensions. It's not just the number of workdays, the number of working hours, the communication technologies that we have or whatever it is. It's multidimensional, and that conversation needs to be able to flesh that out. I'm an economist, so I believe in market forces. The talent market is like any other market. It's not perfect. But at the same time, talent do have that ability to flow relatively freely across companies and firms. So companies that do this conversation well would tend to attract better talent, given the amount of pay that they are giving out. And those that do this conversation poorly are going to be less likely to attract the kind of talent that they need. That brings me to the third point that is going to help this balance. It's really the adjustment mechanisms that each company and individual is going to have. If I'm an employee who demands only being able to work 4 hours a week instead of 4 days or 5 days, and I can find companies who are willing to pay me that amount, then great. If I can't, then I need to adjust my own expectations accordingly. Likewise for companies, if I'm going to expect workers to work 7 days a week, 365 days a year, then if I'm attracting all the best talent, then that's fine, but most likely not. And then how do I adjust my position as a company to attract the optimal level of talent that I need so that I can function and achieve all the goals that I have?
Well, there you have it, the bugbears that employees face and how employers can navigate around this wicked problem. Now, if you like this conversation and want to hear others, follow us on your favorite podcast app. You can catch up on Heart of the Matter episodes, like our conversation with senior hospital staff pushing through the biggest COVID surge in Singapore to date, or F&B owners on whether they can survive the start-stop restrictions. This has been Heart of the Matter with me, Lin Su Ling, Crispina Robert, our podcast editor, and Erin Low, our research writer, signing off until next week.